I received a phone call a couple of years ago from a rabbi in New Zealand. He had some issue that came with the mikvah. So he wanted to try to describe it to me. He said, it's very, very hard to describe being with folks. I could see it. So I said to him, so why don't you bring out somebody close-wise to look at some mikvah? So he said, there's nobody around. I said, there's nobody around. I said, how far are you from Australia? I always thought that Australia and New Zealand was like going from Peter to the Heights. It was a four-hour flight. I said, unless you're willing to pay me to come out to New Zealand, which I wasn't particularly interested in doing, seeing the fact that I had Jordan Shabbos in New Zealand, so I didn't want to get involved. I tried to help a little bit over the phone. So sometimes, those mikvahs, the issues are things that the rabbanim, you're in an out-of-town place somewhere, you have to really be at least some idea. No one's expecting you to go ahead and necessarily manage to build a mikvah from scratch, but you do try to bring in experts, real people, really proficient in the technicality of mikvahs. But every rabbi out there has to be know the ABCs of the mikvahs, has to know what to look for, has to know what potential. So you have to know a little bit one of the questions they asked me on my problem was that they were in the middle of they were raising money for a mikvah. Myself's going to Baruch Hashem built one, but they were in the middle of trying to get a mikvah project. So they asked me what experience I had in building mikvahs. I was like 32 or something, whatever. I haven't built too many mikvahs in my life. I'm practically zero. So I said to him the following. I said, I can tell you one thing for absolute certainty, is that the Chazon Ish said he never saw a pulse of mikvahs. I guarantee you that when we finally build it, it's going to be kosher. And then I said to him, do you really want to hear the other half of the Chazon Ish said? They said, yeah. I said, Chazon Ish also said that he never saw a kosher Eruv. They didn't like that part, but they still hired me to build the mikvah. Anyway, so the bottom line is that we have to try to familiarize ourselves with the Ramesh the Russian Prophet in terms of mikvahs. Let's see what we can do in the small amount of time allowed us this afternoon. The Torah describes in Parashat Shmini really two different types of mikvahs. It's a little bit of a misnomer. One of them is called the mikvah, one of them is called the mayon. So, in an Arab lingo, you just interchange the two, but there's really two very, very different principles. One is a mayon. A mayon is very, very easy to build. You have to do absolutely nothing. You just have to get some underground spring that's already there. And sure, there's both of us could be titled in the mayon. So those who have ever had the schus going to the Ari's mikvah, but know that the Ari's mikvah is not a mikvah, it's a mayon. The mayon is perfectly acceptable. Mayon has even certain characteristics to make it even better, in a certain sense, for then a mikvah. Next time you want to, if anyone calls in, you do the Tara of Mitzayir, or you have to make Parav Duma, something like that. Tara says Av, so there are a couple of things that mayon has over a mikvah, not too relevant for most of those things, not yet at least. But most of our mikvahs are real mikvahs, they're not mayonos, they're real mikvahs. Mikvah is the other model of the Torah uses, a chmayim, a bor, mikvah, mayim. So those three words, a bor, mikvah, mayim, sums it all up. A bor means a pit, mikvah means a gathering of water, mayim means, of course, water. So a bor, mikvah, mayim, those are the ABCs of the mikvahs. Fundamentally, we build mikvahs exactly the same way they did 3,000 years ago in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, except that we just do it a lot fancy, we do it a lot more convoluted ways, but the basic principles of the mikvahs haven't changed much, but just the modern-day applications of them have changed a little bit over the years, but again, we have to familiarize ourselves with the basic halacha to understand how it plays out. So there's one basic fundamental halacha that we have to be concerned in whenever we begin to build a mikvah, and that's what's called the mayim shuvim. The Mishnayos tell us in Masechet Mikvahs, because in the Gemara many places, called mayim shuvim. Mayim shuvim means, I didn't bring it for this reason, but this is mayim shuvim. Why is this mayim shuvim? Because it was in a kli. Actually, the Mishnah says that even though kli is not makabel tuma, plastic is not makabel tuma, but it's still considered to be mayim shuvim. So any water that was in a receptacle, was in a vessel, was automatically possible for the purposes of mikvahs. Is this a din min haTorah? Is this a din min derabbanan? That's the big machlekes of Rishonim. There are some Rishonim of the opinion that the whole institution of mayim shuvim is only a chumma min derabbanan. Min haTorah, you can fill up water in barrels, pour it into a hole in the ground. The mikvah has to be 40 saum. There are some sukkim that are big enough that an average sized person could fit in one shot. So shiruch chachamim, that's 40 saum. So according to some Rishonim in haTorah, you can take barrels of water and fill up a hole in the ground and show, and you have yourself a kosher mikvah mid deraisa. Why is that clearly not acceptable mid derabbanan according to those opinions? Because we're afraid lest you tovel in a kli itself. If you would be tovel in a big barrel, in a movable bathtub or something, so that would be a problem in haTorah, because the Torah describes the mikvah as being karka. It has to be mechub l'karka. Bor mikvah mayim has the connotation of mechub l'karka. So if you tovel inside a kli itself, that would be no good in haTorah. So according to some Mishnayos, therefore there were goals in mid derabbanan that you can't use mayim shuvim up to tefillah of a kli. Other Mishnayos say, no, that's not the pshat. The pshat is that there is a problem of shuvim even mid the araisa. The only thing is that it's only a problem in deraisa. That's what we call rubo shol. Most of the mikvah, most of the 40 saw are bayim shuvim. So that would be a problem on the level of deraisa. Chazal made a takana that even if a very, very small amount of the mikvah is bayim shuvim, that's still a problem. That's in fact on a midrabanan. How much did Chazal make a takana on? That's machlek is a tanan. We paskin gimel lugin. Gimel lugin is not all that much. A revius for kiddush is a revius alum. Let's say approximately 3 ounces. So a lug is approximately 12 ounces, so approximately 36 ounces. So that's not all that much. This mayim shuvim over here is 16.9 fluid ounces. That means about two of these, two plus of these bottles can disqualify the entire mikvah lamaisa. So according to everybody, that's only a chumah midrabanan. Midraisa, the worst case scenario is if rova mikvah shol if it's possible in the Torah, based on psukim drashas that the Torah's Koranim has. The fact that even a small amount of mayim shuvim can cause problems in the mikvah, that's only midrabanan. So when all the dust settles, everybody agrees there's a psul of mayim shuvim. It's not even a negotiation. Any mikvah that's built with water that came from vessels is absolutely no good, not acceptable at all, not even in the other. Whether or not that's an absolute din deraisa, whether it's only a chumah midrabanan, that's a machlokes. The Ramah's machmir nuchos mikvahos in this, the Ramah paskins, we assume that rov shol is in fact a psul in our Torah. So we're going to take this with the utmost seriousness. We're going to approach any issues with mayim shuvim with real, real trepidation. So what does this mean for us in terms of mayim shuvim? So again, the classic mayim shuvim is, you can't fill up water in a bottle, in a cup, in a barrel. That's clearly a problem of mayim shuvim. What about water that we have in our systems, water that comes through our pipes? Is that considered to be mayim shuvim or not? So the Mishnah tells us that a pipe is not considered to be a kli for these purposes because the pipe is open on both ends. So the water is never miskabel in the middle. The whole idea of mayim shuvim is that there's a base kibul, that there's a place that the water collects in. When you have a pipe, so it's open on both sides, that by definition is not considered to be a base kibul. So in theory, one could argue that you can have modern-day plumbing, you can have water going through pipes, and the water will just, as long as it goes pipe, ends up in your bathtub, so maybe you can have yourself a kosher mikvah. The problem is that somewhere along the way in the water systems that we have set up today, there are places where the water does collect. There are water meters and other things, or water tanks, or other things somewhere along the way that pose problems. So therefore, the bottom line is, Nimru Vagama, we pass in Felicium Suffolk, that any water that comes through the regular taps water, the regular water, New York City water, any other city, any other public water, is absolutely out of the question. Cannot be used for mikvah in any shape or form. We treat it as mayim shuvim. Again, because of some very real concerns along the way.
Theoretically, if it didn't sit anywhere, that would be good.
Right. If the water went mamish from the reservoir directly through pipes, and up in the bathtub, so then it would be okay. A couple of years ago, when I was living with Mikvah, so where he was wanted to get some first-hand knowledge about some water tanks or something, about just how serious of a problem of mayim shuvim it really was. So I got somebody, this is off the record, I got somebody to take me to the roof of one of the buildings here where the water tanks were, but they failed to tell me that I had to climb up a ladder to get to the top of the building. I didn't mind climbing up, but it was very, very scary climbing down. So I had to make a quick decision at the top whether I wanted to spend the rest of my life on the top of 184th Street on top of a water tank. So Baruch Hashem, all's well that ends well, I did make it to down in one piece. Okay, so Gedola Shimusha Yosef Limuda, oh Shimusha, I gotta get the real stuff. Okay, good. So when we build a mikvah, so we have no way we're going to rely on using city water in any shape or form. Our water is going to be the real stuff. It's going to come right from Shemayim, right from the clouds. Is going to end up right into our mikvah. Now that sounds easier said than done. What would that mean is that you have a hole in the roof, and whenever roof rains, it starts raining into the base of tefillah. That's probably not going to happen. So we have to go with a little bit of a better controlled system. So what all mikvahs use is the same type of a system that we basically, and I'm going to say it a bad word, we collect the water. I don't really mean collect it. The water is gathered. I don't really mean gathered, but the water comes into some kind of a clay. It comes into something on the roof of the building that eventually that water makes it down its way through a couple of different odds and ends, ends up into what we call the boros, into the actual cisterns, the actual holes in the ground that are going to house the mega shovels.
Maybe you'll take
questions. Okay, we're going to shoot them. We'll get that. So the water is going to come down into what? Well, it's going to come into these things on the roof. These pipe-like types of things on the roof, the water is not going to collect in them. They're going to be open on both ends, so it's going to rain down, and it's eventually going to go down these gutters on the roof, and it's going to go down into another pipe, and another pipe, and another pipe. But again, every pipe's going to be 9 she'uvim because they'll open at both ends, and eventually the water's going to land into the ground, into the floor of where the mikveh is, and after a good couple of rains, or one good kishmacha rain, you end up with 40 saw, and we're going to have a kosher mikveh that did not have any shaykhus whatsoever to my children. Now, when we build these pipe structures, we have to be very, very careful because there is a machlekes in Rishonim about what if you have a pipe that's not a perfectly straight pipe? What if you have a pipe that's a bent pipe? So a bent pipe is a machlekes in Rishonim, and maybe that's a problem with my shuvin. Because even though it's open on both ends, but in theory, if you hold it at the right angle, so the water could actually collect in the middle. So that's a question. So some of the pipe structures, the way they're built, they're called elbow pipes, because Shmuel came up with elbow. So sometimes when you have the two pipes going in different directions, so your average plumber would just put on some kind of a schmitzer called an elbow pipe, but we wouldn't want to do that when we build a mikveh because that may be a potential problem of shulman. So we have to even be careful, even when you're building these kinds of structures. Another big, big issue in terms of, even though we don't have any real kli here, is that there is a whole sugya in, it's actually quoted in Bava Kamma. Most of Shiva guys never learned mikveh, so they know this from Bava Kamma Meruba. There's a sugya of tzina shechakal of kavai, where you have a possibility where you have a pipe, and the pipe itself is not my shulman, it's not a kli, but there's some kind of indentation in the pipe itself. There's some kind of a nick in the pipe, and some of the water is now collecting inside that pipe. So even though it's not, the pipe itself is not a kli, but maybe the little hole inside the pipe is considered to be a kli. So that's a big, big machlekes in Rishonim, is that a problem or not? So most of the Rishonim have the opinion that that's not really a problem, because that little nick was not made on purpose, and that's what's called monosyllabase kibul. Anytime you have a vessel, a receptacle, that wasn't made for the purposes of accepting water, so that in and of itself is not called a base kibul, and that wouldn't pose a problem. If you mamish carved out a hole there for whatever reason, so that would be a problem, but if it happened by itself, you don't have to worry about it. And there's a minority view in Rishonim that maintains that even that's a problem. Even though it wasn't made with the kavanas kibul, just the fact that it is miskabel, that is considered to be a problem. It was mikvahs, as you'll see a theme developing, we try very, very hard to build the mikveh that's kosher l'choladeus. They already quote from the Tashbetz. Tashbetz is one of the Rishonim, the Tashbetz, who says, when you build a mikveh, you have to build a mikveh that's kosher l'choladeus. You want to build an Eruv that's kosher for some opinion, so then everyone can choose for themselves whether they want to carry a Shabbos. But if you build a mikveh and half the people say they're not going to use the mikveh, that's a disaster. So therefore, we always up the ante. The standards of Amitvolos are so mehudra, we go above and beyond all other areas of Allah to make sure the mikveh is up to par. So here, we don't want to rely on the Rav HaRishon who say that it's okay. We're going to be careful when we build a mikveh to make sure that the pipes don't have any nicks, any holes, any scratches, anything in them, because less some of the water collect inside them. So in the olden days, this was a very, very hard feat to do because pipes in the olden days were generally made out of wood. The problem is that wood begins to rot, it begins to crack, and even if you first fill up the mikveh, even though you smoothed out the pipes, after time, if you want to fill up the mikveh again, so then you're going to run into trouble because the wood begins to deteriorate. So the Rishonim already discussed this, and some Rishonim came up with the idea that instead of using wooden pipes, maybe we should make metal pipes. Now, metal pipes are a whole other problem. You know, with wells, with the government, a couple of tumas, a whole other chagadya. So you have this like tension about how to build a mikveh. We try so hard to build a mikveh in a way that dulach aladeis, so we'd love to use wood because that mitigates certain problems. And the other hand, it creates certain other problems. So Baruch Hashem, technology has advanced to the point we can have our cake and eat it. But we can have pipes that are not makabel tumas, so we don't have the metal issue, and they not tend to deteriorate. They don't tend to rot right away. Called plastic pipes. So that's pretty much what we build as mine. All the pipes that we build today are with PVC, so they're plastic. Basically, they're plastic material. It's not makabel tumas. It's not going to scratch. Everything is great. In Avot Bichayim, we're still very, very careful when we fill up a mikvah. So we get on our hands and knees and we go all the way up, climb up literally onto the roof of the mikvah, and run our hands along the gutters and make sure that nothing's cracked, there's nothing that we're missing here. I remember when we first filled up the mikvah in Paramus years ago, so the person, the Rav, who we had, it was a real world-class mikvah. The mikvah has become today much like a specialty. A person needs a surgery, you go to a specialist. But today you go to a mikveh specialist, and there's some rabbanim floating around who are really, really mamish yovelai, they spent it on the mikvahs. So this particular rabbi we brought in from Monroe, so it was highly recommended to us, so he insisted that I climb up on the roof, and that's how I get all my climbing experience. I climbed up on the roof, and I ran my hands with him. I didn't trust myself to do it. I ran my hands with him, make sure everything is okay, and shook. So as we're up there, and I'm, looking down and remembering my drama on top of roofs. So I'm on top of the roof, and as this, I'm putting my hand around the pipe, I think everything's great. He asked, what do you think? What do you think? I think everything is smooth. Love's like a baby skin, smooth, not a naked or nothing. So he says to me, we have a problem. So what the problem is, we have a bias kibble. So there's a bias kibble here. There's a receptacle here. Well, where's the bias kibble? I said, I don't feel the bias kibble. So he says, take a look at the screws that are screwing down the plastic into the top, into the roof. So screws have a place where you put the screwdriver in to turn them. So he says the water is collecting in those little drops of the top of the screw heads, and that's considered to be a chashash of a base kibble. So if you have enough water collection there, you may have gibel lugin over the course of 150 gallons or something filled up a mikvah. You may end up with gibel lugin, and that could possibly the entire mikvah. Now, truth to be told, we hold the ikra din that wouldn't be a problem because it wasn't nasa of a base kibble. Nobody in their right mind was thinking of filling up the top of the screw with water to drink from. So that wasn't the goal of the heads of the screws. It was just simply to stick a screwdriver. That's what I really call the base kibble. So, but alpha pechein, since that minig is to be very machmir, but even non intentional base kibbles. So I said, so what do we do now? What's the solution? We just built a $1 million mikvah. We got a couple of screw heads that'll lose what we're supposed to do. He said, no problem. He came prepared for everything. He pulls out of his pocket a wad of silly putty, and he sticks a piece of silly putty into each one. He had planned this before, but every mikvah has the same problem. He sticks in every screw head, is filled up with silly putty, lest there be a nice kibble. Okay, so wondering why, if you ever find some silly putty in the mikvah, that's where it came from. It came from the top of the roof. Okay, good. So we have to be very, very careful whenever we build the mikvah. Always keep our eyes open for any potential chashashas, of any base kibbles, to make sure you don't run into any problems, I'm sure. Okay, so for any questions at this point?
If the mikvah has 40 kasher and then
then water comes in afterwards,
right.
Perfectly.
So then in the case that we just described, by the time that, wouldn't you have enough water that just ran straight through the pipe?
I never ran a test case to see how much water gets stuck inside an unsealing putty on top of a screw. I have no idea. So I wouldn't even know how to begin to make that calculation.
Assume the intention is irrelevant in the case, why would
If you assume that an intention doesn't play a role,
right.
So then, because in theory you can collect water in a bent pipe, because the water, if you hold the pipe at an angle, so the water can sit there.
But the pipes weren't made with the intention of...
No. Okay, according to the Mat Mekibah, it would be fine.
Right.
That Chumrah is only true according to the Mat Mekibah. Okay, so this is all great. It sounds like, no problem, we have our roofs in place, our gutters, everything is involved, there's no base kibah, everything is hunky-dory. So we just filled up everything with 40 saw, had a good couple of geschmapper rains, and we filled up a hole with 40 saw, we're ready to start business. So you would think, what's the best thing to do? Great, so let the women come and start using the mikvah. So the woman uses the mikvah, she tovel in this big hole with all full of 100% rainwater. She's tovel, us. Another woman, 20 women to tovel tonight, and then the next night, another 20 women ask, let's get out into the water.
It's going to run out eventually.
Well, we didn't do anything.
It goes below 40.
It's going to drip out.
No,
you're
disgusting.
It's going to be disgusting. Yeah, after a couple of days, I don't even know if it's going to last that long. It's going to be terrible. The last thing you want to do is have water sitting there for days and weeks and months and years before we bother filling it up again. So we just have to be saying that it's such a to-do to fill the mikvah. So if you think about it, what we would have to do is as follows. We'd let them use the mikvah for one or two nights. Then we'd have to drain it out. We'd have to empty it out and then refill it. Now, refilling it is all nice, assuming that what? So then it rains, and it's a lot of water. It takes a lot of water to fill up a mikvah. Not so simple to fill up a mikvah. So you can go weeks and months without a functioning mikvah. So obviously we have to come up with some kind of a system that enables us to keep the mikvah going on for months and years at a time. So this is not our problem. This is already Chazal's dilemma. Chazal's the only problem. They had the same problem in the olden days. They dug a hole in the ground, they filled up with water, use it once or twice, and finish. So now what do you do? So the Mishnayos and Masechet Bigvos come up with all kind of different, very, very creative solutions, invoking certain Deraisa principles. You have to build with the Kashim and Torah. So certain fascinating principles in terms of the ABCs of Masechet Bigvos to enable us to overcome this problem. All of the building Bigvos today has to overcome this basic problem. How do you keep a mikvah going for a long period of time, but yet being able to refresh the water? So the last thing you want to do is have to empty out the mikvah all the time. So here we introduce the two different principles in Halacha. And they're both described in the classic source of the Mishnayos, the Tosefta, the Rishonim, and the Bigvos. And both of these principles have come into play in the modern-day application of building a mikvah. So one of the principles is what's called the principle of Hashaka. Most people, in the end, the word Hashaka, they think that it means kissing, the Lashon Neshika. That may be true, but just a little bit of a kiss. If you're interested, there's a Radak in Sefer Yoel that says, not my discovery, that says that's not where it comes from. It comes based on a possible Shika Hayikovim. It's based on the meaning of the word flow. It's nothing to do with Neshika, nothing to do with kissing. Just in case you're interested in that tidbit of information. So the term Hashaka means as follows. When you have two mikvahs, one mikvah is perfectly kosher, it has 40 saw of nay or maybe shaman, so it's regular rainwater, no manchuva whatsoever. Now you have another hole in the ground that's filled up with manchuva. Where did this manchuva come from? It came right out of your faucet. It's 100% manchuva. And it's possible, even in a Torah, in the Rabban, it's absolutely not acceptable. But there's a hocus-pocus solution to make the Mayim Shuvim into being a kosher mikvah. What is that? If you connect the two mikvahs, so there's a little bit of a contact, a little bit of a flow between the two mikvahs, one the kosher mikvah and the posel mikvah, so that automatically will declare that not only can you still toggle in the original Mayim Shuvim, you can now toggle in the Mayim Shuvim as well. So how much of a connection does it have to be? So the Mishnah describes it has to be a hole, not all that big. It has to be, I don't know if that's called, Shofaris HaNode, okay? Shofaris HaNode, a node is it's like a canteen of water. Shofaris is the tube that we stuck into the hole of the canteen. So Gemara says that we have a segment that that's called days, that's called Chazir. It means you put your fingers like this and you go around the circumference of making a circle from two fingers, that's the shear, what's called Shofar's. I don't know, 2-3 inches, I don't know exactly what it comes out to. So, as long as you have a hole that big connected to the mikvahs, then you can now be tovel in this manshuv. So the water that your body is touching comes right out of the bathtub, right out of the faucet, right out of the hose. But it doesn't matter, since there's a connection between the two, that's perfectly acceptable. So if you can really begin to sense, that could be a really great solution. Namely, the original Mayim Shuv, the original Mayim Shuv that we worked so hard to collect, we're going to keep it clean as anything. No human being's going to touch that water. No one's not anywhere near that water. You're not even going to see that water. That water is behind closed doors. But what you will be told in is you'll fill up every night or so, they'll fill up what we call the base up to be, or the place where the person's actually being told. They'll fill it up with regular sink water right out of the faucet, which is Pasul Gomer, according to the Ramah, it's Pasul Minat Torah. We'll open up a little hole between the two boroughs. The waters will touch, or kiss, or overflow, whatever you think the word Hashem means. And sure, and I'll be told them the Mayim Shuvim. Now that Mayim Shuvim will get dirty. Big deal, it'll get dirty. So what will we do? We'll empty it out. Now when we empty it out, we don't want to empty out by mistake this also. What will we do? We'll take a plug in here, and we'll drain out the Mayim Shuvim, clean out the mikvah, and start off the bar night. We'll fill it up again. So Baruch Hashem for the wonderful discovery, invention of flowing water. We can simply, every couple of nights, whenever we're interested in making fresh water, we'll just simply turn on the tap and let it fill up and just make that Hashaka and Shalom Yisrael. Gevalik, gevalik, your solution. So it's almost a gevalik solution for the following reason. There is a big machlekes in the Rishonim about this halacha, about Hashaka. Does this halacha only apply when the hole is actually open, when the Hashaka is still present, the Hashaka is still intact? Or do we say that hocus pocus, once the Hashaka was done for one split second, so then all of a sudden the Mayim Shuvim become kosher, and even if the hole is subsequently closed, everything is going to be fine, everything still remains okay. What's the Shaila? So most of the Rishonim seem to be making on the Shaila. The Rashba and the Rosh both write that that's okay, that as long as the water is touched for one split second, the water touched, it becomes kosher. What is that based on? What's that principle based on? So there is a principle in Luchos Tumah that if I take tummy water, and I pour the tummy water into a mikvah, it loses its tumah. Generally, tefillah b'mikvah doesn't work for foods and drinks. I can't take a tummy apple and put it into the mikvah. Tefillah b'mikvah is betarik, other miraculously. It doesn't work on food and drinks. I can't take a cup of wine and pour it into the mikvah and make it tahor. But the Gemara and Mishnah, the Gemara and Beitzah, has a principle for us that what you can do is you can be metahir water by planting it into the mikvah. Putting it into a mikvah, it becomes tahor. It loses its status of tuma. So the Rashba and the Rosh write, just as water loses its tuma by just becoming part of a mikvah, it loses its psula shuvim as well by becoming part of a mikvah. And now the Mayim Shuvim, there's no longer Mayim Shuvim. So once the Mamshuchim has placed the Mamshuchim, it lost its status of Mamshuchim, it's now hocus pocus. It's now it's Mega Shaman. Once it's Mega Shaman, then I can close up the hole, and I can be told, well, over here. Why would I want to do that? Why would that be logistically a good thing to do? Because remember, what was my entire goal? My entire goal was to keep the original 40 sauce clean as possible. I want it to last as long as possible without it getting contaminated. So if I only have to open up the hole for a split second, that's really good. And I have to keep that hole open the entire night and have 50 women being tovel, and eventually some of the waters are going to start to move back and forth, and I'm going to end up with very, very dirty negishonim, then after a certain amount of time, I'm going to defeat my entire purpose. So I would really, really want to be able to open the hole for a split second and then close it again. So that's exactly what the Rashba and the Rosh say. Open it before anyone's in the mikvah, then close it right away, and then let the women tovel in the, what used to be Ma'am Shuvim, that halachically is now negishonim, and shalom Yisrael. However, not all the Rishonim agree. Rabbi Yerucham, who's the Talmud of the Rosh, quotes that there are some who disagree with this Rebbe. Some disagree with the Rosh. Some Rishonim said it's not true that you have to keep the hole open at all times. Otherwise, the Ma'am Shuvim is just plain old Ma'am Shuvim. What's the lotus? So it said, oh, in the name of Reb Chaim, that appears in the Chiddush Reb Chaim and Hashas. Reb Chaim explained that the reason why the other Rishonim disagree, why the Rabbi Yerucham disagrees with the Rosh and the Rosh, is because those other Rishonim understood that you can't remove the psul shuvim. It's not like tumor that gets removed. The reason why you're allowed to tovel in ma'am shuvim is what's called chiba mikvos. The din is that kol zman that something is mechuba to a mikvah, harel kamoy. Even though itself is not really a mikvah, but if it's mechuba to a mikvah, so that's okay. It's like moshel ma'ad avadonah. Let's say you have a big mikvah of 40 saw, and you have a very, very small thing next to it, which is only 35 saw. There happens to be a hole between the two. So the Mishnah says you can be told in the 35 saw. So as long as you can fit, if you're a small person, you can be told in the 35 saw. Why is that? Not that the 35 saw has become kosher. It's just that it's the chubah to a mikveh that's kosher. Let's say you would close the hole. So of course you can't toggle in the 35 saw. 35 saw is not a shear of a mikveh. So there's a second principle at play here called chiba mikvots. So that's what Chaim explains. According to Ben Yerucham, chiba mikvots only makes sense calls man that it's actually mechubah to the mikveh. So therefore, according to the other Rishonim, you would have to be careful not just to open the hole for a split second, you have to keep the hole open as long as anyone's being told about in this otherwise called Ma'am Shulim. How do we pass the halacha on this? So the Iker didn't show up and pass the clue on this, but the Shach quotes that Yesh Omrim Mo Machmir, and therefore the Shach writes, we try as best as we can to keep the hole open. So therefore, the standard practice today is when women are tovlos in this kind of a setup, most of our mikvahs have this kind of a setup. So when our mikvahs, the women are told on this Ma'am Shuvim, we will try the chachiva to keep this hole open in deference to that by now review of the Mishnah. So you can already begin to see that this Eitzah of Hashocha is not a bad Eitzah, but it's not a foolproof Eitzah. So there are two things that can go wrong with this Eitzah of Hashocha. So one thing can go wrong is that it could be that somebody was careless. Human error always plays a factor in those mikvahs in all the areas of life. And it could be that somebody forgot to reopen this hole. So why would you forget? Why don't you just leave the hole open all the time? Well, let's not forget. We really don't want to keep it more open than we have to, because we don't want to keep it open 24/7. To keep it open 24/7, then a lot of the water is going to be moving around, maybe more than we're comfortable with. So the old approach to mikvahs was always try to keep it as closed as much as possible. If and when you have to open it, i.e. b'shas tefillah, so we'll open it b'shas tefillah. But otherwise, it would probably be better to keep it closed more often than open. If that's the case, then human error sets in, and we closed it last night after the last woman comes, but then maybe a woman's going to come in the middle of the night, and she doesn't know she's supposed to keep the hole open. Maybe tomorrow night the mikvah lady is not as proficient what's going on, and someone's going to forget to keep to open the hole. Now again, is that something we're going to lose a lot of sleep over? No, because according to the strict din, Shulchan Aruch, the Ikra din is like the Rashba and the Rosh, the one who was connected to Saul with, it doesn't really matter that it's not open right now. So we're going to lose our Rabbeinu Rucham's Rebbeim, we'll open it at the end of the world. But something much more difficult could happen here. What could potentially go really, really wrong with a Shaka? Something really could go wrong. What is that?
Become a base kibble?
No base kibble. No base kibble. Good. We're not into that. What could go wrong? What could be the worst case scenario?
You drain both.
Okay, so you have to remember the plug of the hole, you're right. That could be a logistical nightmare. The worst case scenario.
You refill it without opening it after.
Oh, if you refill the Ma'am Shuvim and you forgot to open it up in the first place. That could be a disaster. Or if you were lazy or careless and you refilled it to what point?
Below
the hole. So that's a mamish disaster that you just created a mikveh that according to the Ramah is possible in Daraisa. It's mamish manchuvim. Small technique. Everyone's chayv koris using that mikveh because the mikveh is mamish manchuvim. It's like one big hole full of manchuvim. So it's a good idea, Hashraka. It's just that it's prone to potential mistakes. So you have to be really, really careful if and when you want to build a mikveh just based on Hashraka alone because things could go wrong.
Worst case, wouldn't that still fall under that initial Daraisa that Rebbe spoke about in the beginning?
That one Rishon, those Rishon will say that Ma'am Shurim is Kashim in Daraisa. Yeah, but first of all, the Rabbanon doesn't pass that way. And second of all, even according to those Rishon, still pass them in the Rabbanon.
So what I'm saying is, Rebbe said it would be a Chiyuv Karis.
That's why I preface by saying, according to the Rabbanon, it would be a Chiyuv Karis. Right. No problem, yeah.
Did you mention that if you thought the pool of Shuvim and you don't unplug the thing while you're doing that, then it's possible?
Yeah, if it was never opened, if they never touched, so then you never did a shaka.
Oh, okay.
If in any shape or form, 1 minute along the way, you did a shaka, then the mikveh is meeker, then okay.
Okay.
All right? So this is it's a good idea, but not the best idea. It's not the best way to build it. So what other options do we have available to us? So another option, it seems very similar to a shaka, so we should make a beast. Very, very close to Hashapa. But another way to build a mikvah is as follows. Instead of invoking the principle of Hashacha, we're going to invoke the principle called Zuriya. We mentioned a little bit before. Zuriya means to literally plant the pasul water, to plant the Ma'am Shuvim into the mikvah proper. Unlike Hashapa, we don't plant it in. We put it on the side and then we hope for the best. Here, we literally plant the water. What would that mean practically? So you build the mikvah, you wait till it rains, and you get 40 saw, then you shove everything through. Now you want to fill up the mikvah. You don't want men, you don't want the women, no one's going to go near this. You want people to be tovel over here. So unlike the first case, where we poured the water from the sink directly into the Ma'am Shuvah, into this bore, and then we connect it through the hole, there's another way to do it. What's the other way to do it? Pour the water, where? Into the mikvah. Have the water go right from the sink into the mikvah. And what do we want to happen afterwards? We want it to overflow. So the Mishnah in Maseches Mikvah speaks exactly about this. The Mishnah says, you have a mikvah, 40 saw, mamali v'kotef, you can pour rainwater, you can pour bucketed water into the mikvah and have it overflow, in short. So in theory, if you want to do it the old style way, you can have a great idea. You have two holes next to each other. One is full of 40 saw. You pour a lot of water into the earth, flows over the edge, and shalom by Israel. Now, that's not such a good logistical solution. Why? Because what are you going to have every night? You'd have a major flood. Because if every night, when you fill up the mikvah, every couple of nights you fill up the mikvah, you'd have water all over the place. So the last thing you want to do is have the water literally go over the edge. So what do? You make a little hole, right? So lo and behold, you make a hole. And the goal of the hole is not really halachic. The water could just as easily go over the top. It's just practically, because it's just less messy, that the water is controlled. So the water goes through the hole, and after time, it will fill up into here. Now, what is this new water called? Well, it's called kosher, because it had zuriya, like the Mishnah says explicitly. The Ma'am Shuvim went into here, flowed over here, and shalom Yisrael. So it's a similar idea. According to the Rosh and the Rosh, it's a similar kind of an idea that we're connecting, and then that we're being the tahir of the water. In the first case, we're going to tire the water, so to speak, by having them next to each other. Here we're going through rather than. What's the milo of this mikvah? There's a tremendous milo of this mikvah. All the concerns we had before about maybe somebody forgot to fill it up properly. Maybe somebody closed off. It doesn't matter. You don't need any holes open anymore. Once we have 40 saw in this new bore, we by definition have kosher water. Because any water that came here, there's no hose that empties into this. There's no faucet that goes anywhere near this. The faucet only goes into this. So any water that comes into here will automatically have gone through the 40 saw of Megisham first. So this is Gevaldik. This is wonderful. You can be told about this. It's a very Shemishna in Maseches Mikvah. Sounds like it's a no-brainer. However, there's a little bit of a problem. The little bit of a problem is as follows. after a little bit of time, how much real, true rainwater is going to be present here? Now, the first time around, you can have a lot of rainwater. Okay, through the map, I thought that before you saw. I poured a lot of water into here, so I'm going to end up with a lot of rainwater here, a lot of rainwater here. Well, again, we're not going to keep this forever. We're going to dump this out after a couple of nights. It's going to get dirty. Then we're going to do it again. Now, after you did this, again, I don't know the statistics in this one. You started out with 40 saw. If you do this stunt once, how much rainwater do you think you have really in here?
7.0.
Suddenly you have 35. And then you go down to 30. Then you go down to 25. You go down to 20. At some point, you end up with nothing. So does that bother us or not? So according to most Rishonim, it doesn't bother us. According to most Rishonim, once you pour water, once there's an array of water into a mikvah, any water that you put in becomes like rainwater. So now, halachically, you have all rainwater. Do you physically have rainwater? No. But it doesn't really make a difference. Halachi, you have rainwater. Except for who? Anybody know? Rambam, maybe. But the Ravid. The Ravid is the biggest issue here. The Ravid says that this idea of Zriyat is gewaltig. It's burning. It's fantastic. But there's one catch. Says the Ravid, you have to still have Rov Megishonim. You can play this game a few times, says the Ravid, until you reach the point where you no longer have a rove of Megishonim in this area. Says the Ravid, once you've dipped beneath the point of rove Megishonim, all bets are off and everything now becomes possible. That's what's called the sugya of, what's called? Nosan Sov. A big machlikus of Rishonim. The Ravid learned it one way, most Rishonim learned it another way. According to the Ravid, it comes out that mikvah is potentially going to become problematic. Do we paskin like this Ravid? Depends who you ask. Pashas and Shulchan Aruch, no. Nevertheless, the Ravid did say it, and we have this old pismah in that mikvah to build. We try to build a mikvah that's good according to everybody. So we'll try as best as we can to build a mikvah even according to the Ravid. But it's a big pickle, because anytime you're using Zriya, you run into a problem. So this great idea came up, right? Phenomenal idea. The first one came up with this idea. He said, you know what? We don't want to build a mikvah just based on Zriya, because we're nervous about the Ravid. Now, I'll be intellectually honest about this. Some Sofer writes in his Tshuvas that the mikvah in Preshburg that he supervised, he was the Rav Preshburg, was built plain and simple of Bar Zriya. It was based on this model. That's all there is. There ain't no more. And the Chacham Sofer writes, it's a gevaldike kosh lechatchila mikvah, and nobody seems to be too worried about the Ravid. So, afal pichein in the last 200 years, so people got a little nervous. They got a little nervous about the Ravid. So now we have two models in front of us. We could theoretically build a mikvah based on Hashapa and call it a day, but we're all nervous about human error. We could build a mikvah based on Zriya alone, but we're worried about the Ravid. So we came up with the following idea. Let's combine the two. Let's build another couple $1,000. We'll build another hole in the ground. Every time you put a hole in the ground, it costs you a couple $1,000. Let's come up with the following ritual. Let's build a mikvah. Here's my base tefillah. Okay, this is where I'm going to be actually tovah. So people are actually going to be. I'm going to have one bore on the side, derech hashapa. So this is going to be 40 saw, and this is going to be 40 saw of Megishamim. And I'll have another bore on the side, also 40 saw of Megishamim. So I had to read for a lot of rain for this one. And here I'm going to make a hole. And we're going to call this a Nekev what? We'll make it exact. We'll call it a Nekev Hashapa. Okay? And I'm going to make another hole here also. But I'm not going to call it a Nekev Hashapa. What am I going to call it? A Nekev Zriya. Why not? Lack of a better term. I'm going to make a Nekev Zriya. It's a different kind of a hole up here. Right? Think about it. It's a very, very different kind of a hole. Now, where is my faucet water going to go into? My faucet's not going to go anywhere near this. My faucet's only going to be open to this. So all water going into the mikvah must go through the Akasha mikvah, invoking the principles. Again, my hole is just here for technical reasons. I could really have it go over the edge, but it's just going to be a flood. So I have myself a hole of Zriya over here. I have another hole over here, which is Nekev Hashapa, and I have really an insurance policy. So I have the best of both worlds. Why? Because even really, 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 this model is a good model. Hashapa is really good. It's good according to everybody. The only problem is, someone's going to make a mistake. Someone's going to forget to fill it up properly. Someone's going to forget to plug up. Something's going to go wrong. So I don't want to rely on this alone. So I have the boy's real. My boy's Zriya is no good according to the Ravid. So I turn around and say, well, Baruch Hashem, I have my hashaka. So in my hashaka, in my nickel hashaka, a bor shot, of course I have 40 so of rainwater. That's not touched. Unlike the bor Zarina model, where I constantly empty out, because when I say empty out the water and all the rainwater came came through here, so slowly but surely I'm depleting my oitzer, my treasure house, my storehouse of water. In the neck of hashaka, in the bor hashaka one, I'm not pouring any water into the bor hashaka, so the water's just sitting there. So that water's sitting there, I'm not going to lose my initial 40 so, my initial at least 20 plus so. So, l'chora, everybody should have me. So I've been yetzei the raiva chita by having a bor hashaka, and I don't have to be so worried about human error because I always have the bor's beautiful method. If two things are true, I could have a pulse of info. If somebody's careless, forgets to fill up the bar shop a problem, forgets to open up the hole, and if the ride is right, then I have a pulse of info. But again, that's already a stretch. So the combination of these two, this is a standard. But this standard model became a very, very regular way to build mikvahs for quite some time.
Okay, I feel like it'd be better if you put the 40 the neck of Shaka on the other side. Meaning, basically, you're making sure that your Zaria bor remains kosher by being kept in from a shaka, which overflows into the base to be like. Therefore, you're making sure that the bor has Zaria is always kosher meant for water. I mean, as opposed to having them both connected to the base of tefila, why don't you just have it so that you make sure that two kosher for the ravid to make sure that the four we saw.
But if you have to have the neck of a shaka, it's got to be next to the place we're talking.
What if that was next to on the other side of the Borzria, making sure that the Borzria water,
you want to shut it to the Zria also.
So this
model was suggested and was actually put into place, and most big folks in America today have built pretty much on this model of covering ourselves on both bases. Came on the Chazinish and said we should go back to the old model. Go back to some circus model. Said the Chazanish, he thinks that the bor hashaka is an absolute waste of time. It's a waste of time and a waste of money. Why is it a waste of time and a waste of money? Says the Chazanish, the whole goal of the bor hashaka is to ensure that the mitzvah is kosher even according to the Ravid. Says the Chazanish Beinenu, he said, after a few days or weeks, even the bor hashaka is going to get depleted. How is the bor hashaka going to get depleted? Well, the hole is always open between the base of tefillah and the bor hashaka, at least open when the people are being tovel. When does water move? When you go into the mikvah. So the woman goes into the mikvah, so some of the water starts moving around slowly but surely. One day you lose one ounce, the next day you lose another ounce. After 2-3 weeks, you're going to lose, you're going to dip beneath the point. So says the Chazanish, if you could test and see, is the original mega shaman around? Says the Chazanish, I don't believe after a week or so it's going to still be there anymore. Your whole goal, you're wasting thousands of dollars of tzibur money to build a hole, and the hole is not accomplishing anything, because the whole goal was to make the ravid sheet. If you're losing the ravid sheet anyway, so the Chazanish said, therefore, it's a waste of time, a waste of money, and don't bother doing it. And then the Chazanish said, not only is it a waste of time and a waste of money to build a bor hashaka, but he said, you have something to lose by having a bor hashaka. What could you potentially lose? Cleanliness in a mikvah, says the Chazanish. It's a cloud gold and water cleanliness. If it stays stagnant, it gets dirty. It collects bacteria, collects germs. If it flows and it moves, so then things are much, much cleaner. Says the Chazanish, if you have the old stock, some sefer kind of mikvah, all you have is the bor's riyah, so the water's replenished all the time. You're filling it up with fresh water. Nothing's really sitting for any long amount of time. The water's going to remain clean. Over here, you're telling me I'm building a bor hashaka. The bor hashaka is going to sit there for 3 years. And no one's going to touch it. No one's going to touch it except for all the bacteria and germs, everything in the air. And don't forget that water is not like a quantity of that water. That water is not like in a bubble. That water is constantly coming back and forth into the base of tefillah because of Rabbeinu Yerucham. You're keeping the hole open. So your whole goal is you want to keep the hole open, and you have this water that's been sitting there for 6 months full of who knows what. That stuff is coming into your base of tefillah, and everyone's getting sick from the base of tefillah. So that's the Chazanish. Therefore, he said you gain nothing and you lose everything. Now, then there are different versions of what exactly the Chazanish was worried about. So in the Sefer Chazanish, he just says it's just dirty, you don't gain anything, and it's a disaster. Off the record, off the beaten track, so in some of the Svarim quote from the Chazanish, that the Chazanish was very nervous, that he was afraid that somebody in the health department was going to catch on to what was going on, and someone was going to come and actually test the water and see that it's full of bacteria, and they're going to close down the mikvahs. So the Chazanish said, either he was literally afraid of that, or figuratively afraid of whatever it was, and they just didn't like this all the time. But Alpha Pichain, not with the Chazanish's objection that his claim that it would be much safer and cleaner and halakhically wiser to, and save a few $1,000 also, and having not having to dig it out of the holding ground, Alpha Pichain, the mikvahs that are built today on America for sure, there were many mikvahs in Eretz Yisrael that were built just according to the model of the Chazanish, but the way we build mikvahs today, we still insist on having both of these models. So how do we respond to the Chazanish's claim? So different people have different responses to the Chazanish. Some argue that maybe his facts are not correct, that maybe the water really does stay intact for longer than the Chazanish suspected. How are you going to prove that? So there are different ways of trying to prove. Now we have a scientific little term out here. We have to look at a bor tefillah, base a tefillah with a bor hashaka, and see just how long does the mayim in the hashaka, in the bor hashaka really stay intact. So how are you going to test that? So there are some, I guess the low-tech people, started to test it with salt. There are kind of different experiments. You put salt into one and see if it's still salty, the levels of salt, the old salt. Then the more high-tech, they started to check with putting different types of water. The heavier water, the lower water, how many, what's it called? What are the different kinds of water? Deuterium,
distilled.
What? No. There are different levels of how many or something or other. How many protons, how many, something or other.
Yeah, isotopes?
I don't know, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But they did different kinds of ways to try to show whether you have original war nuts. Yeah, for all these guys, inside the burris and measuring and doing a chemical test to try to figure out what's going on with it. Maybe so. At the end of the day, I don't know what the answer to any of these questions are. So somebody came with a gewaltig answer. Someone came with a genius answer. Someone said, you know what? For a few more $1,000, what's a few $1,000? A few more $1,000, we're going to build what I always call, I don't think it's a physical term, called the split level bor hashaka. We're going to build a double bor hashaka. What are we going to do? Instead of just building one simple bor hashaka, we're going to build one bor hashaka on top of another bor hashaka. Now, obviously, we have to connect the two of them. If we don't connect, then we're wasting our time. So we have to make a hole here, right? And the hole has to be how big, presumably? What's the shear? Wall connections with both person, right? So we have to have a hole here, and we're going to fill this up with another 40 cells. So that just doubled our waiting time in terms of filling up this mikvah. So we have to wait for it to rain. Besides the 40 cells for the boiseria, we're going to wait for 80 more cells to fill up a two-level, split-level boiseria. What do we gain with this? So some folks can say we gained a lot. Because the bottom bore is probably not going to lose all that much water. But let's not forget, it's not really physically connected. I mean, it's connected halachically, and it is ultimately physically connected, but it's not being affected so badly by the tefillah, by people jumping up and down in the mikvah, because it's all the way in the bottom, and what's helping us?
Gravity's
helping us. So the water's always being pushed down, that the water is, the original water is almost locked into place. I mean, not perfectly. Sometimes you probably lose that also. But for the most part, the original making shum, the original 40 saw locked into place. Even though it's true, the Chazanish may be right, and all the water tests may fail us, and the Chazanish may be right that eventually we're losing this water. But guess what? That's the bad news. The good news is, but we still have this water on the bottom. This is a kosher mikvah. This is now mechuba to this, which in turn is mechuba to this. So you can be tameh in the base of tefillah, even according to the Ravid. Even if Chazanish is right, and we've lost the water here, we still got the water here, so we still have a chibur to a kosher mikvah, so we're still okay even according to the writings. That was a gewaltige etza that was suggested.
Is there any, or can you fill the top or hashaka with Mayim Shemuvim? Because once it's, you have the bottom bor that's going to then convert the water to the top bor.
I mean, in theory, you could do that. But I'll tell you why you don't want to do that. Wait for a second, why you don't want to do that, okay? So it sounds like it's a Gavaldi Eitza. It sounds like it's a no-brainer. You have to have a Shofaris Anod. If you don't have a Shofaris Anod, what's that even discuss? So there were some poskim who were still nervous about this. They weren't so sure that the Chazanish's, complaints about the system are going to be really be addressed. Some poskim suggested, one of the Dole poskim in Europe, the Chalkas Yachman, Dayan Breisch from Switzerland. So he came up with the Gemara Gates. He said, maybe we can minimize this hole a little bit. If we come up with an eitzah about how to make this hole a little bit smaller, So maybe we can minimize any of the concerns of losing out the water, and we'll be home free even if we're going to the Raivin. So he has a whole shtickle Torah based in a Russian advice that under these very strange circumstances, maybe this hole can be tampered with, made a little bit smaller, even smaller up to the point perhaps even of a pinhole, and maybe chibur mikvaos could take place. Now why that should or should not be true is beyond the scope right now, but he has a chiddush that's going to work. And therefore he came with the following names. He said, everyone is trying to scramble to build the best possible mikvah, so we'll build a mikvah with four butters. We have the boar, Zeriya, we're not going to touch that, that's fine. You know, at the end of the day, this is the chassam surface, mikvah and everything is going to, all else fails, the mikvah is still kosher based on Zeriya alone. We're going to build the boar shakal. We're nervous about the chazanish, so we want to make sure we have a rivet one also. And we want to keep the hole as small as possible, so we make it mamshu into a pinhole. So other poskim did not like it. Again, this is beyond the scope right now. The Sternberg has it safe, he thinks it's a disaster. He says, you got to go back to the old style from 5 years before. You got to go back to the original plan of just making a shofar, so no, rather than having a pinhole. So I remember when we were building the mikvah Baramis, all of a sudden, I was doing this thing, it's all good, and then all of a sudden, I got all nervous about something. I remembered that the Rav, who we were using, the Monroe, had been referred to us by another Chasher, Adam Godel, who was Hilchos Mikvaos in America, who was very older at the time. He felt that he wasn't able to get into the fine room with the silly putty anymore, so he had been referred to us this young Rav. And all of a sudden, I remembered that the Rav who had referred to us was a Talmud of the Minchas Yitzchok, Zion Weiss, who was a Mechutin of our branch of the Chalkas Yaakov. So all of a sudden I thought to myself, oh my goodness, the Rav who we were originally talking to had done Shimush in the Kvalos by the Minchas Yitzchok, and maybe the Minchas Yitzchok had been convinced by his Mechutin that he should build this hole, and I started frantically looking at the architectural plans, see how big is this hole? And I don't know anything about that architecture. I couldn't figure out, it's a big hole, little hole, nothing in it. So I started to shake, because this whole shtickle Torah with the small hole was a big, big chiddush. Others didn't like it. And so I remember I called up the Rav from Monroe, along with the silly putty, and I asked him, I said, I'm so sorry to bother you, middle of the night, 2 a.m, I just couldn't sleep that night. I called him. I said, I'm so sorry to bother you, I just have one nakuda I want to ask you. He said, how big is the hole between the two levels of the Bar Shaka? So he knew exactly what he wanted, so he said to me, Don't worry in America, nobody builds like the Chalkas. Yeah, we all build shofars anyway. Don't worry about it. In Switzerland, they build that way. In America, we build this way. Okay, all's well that ends well. So the hole is up there. Good. So the mice in this cha, or two level, bar shop, has become standardized in mikvahs today. So most of the mikvahs today are built this way, that they build with the barzriya, with the bar shop, to the bar shop. But some of you maybe, once they have asked in ways, have such a better idea. You have such a gewaldige etza. Once you're willing to go up and down and telling me that you can build, you can do a shakras up and down, I had a gewaldige etza. What's a gewaldige etza? Good thing it is. I can save you an awful lot of money. This is a gewaldige zoo. I can combine everything. I can make the best mikvah in the world. You know what I'll do? Look at this. I'll build the base at tefillah, right? This is my base at tefillah. And I'm going to do just a bar shakras. I'm not going to make a bar shakras. Where am I going to put the bar shaka? Underneath. Open up a hole over here. Right? Originally, first fill this up with rainwater. Then, after it's filled with rainwater, fill this up with city water. Shalom Yisrael, I'm home free. Everything's gewaldic. What were the whole concerns with the bar shaka? What were we afraid of? That lest somebody didn't fill it up properly. Everybody has to fill it up properly. You have to be a magician. How in the world are you going to fill up and improperly in this case? There's nothing could possibly go wrong. This is the best possible mikvah. This is great. It's easy, it's convenient, and it's cost effective. You only have to build basically one deep hole rather than building four holes. So it's much, much cheaper, much, much simpler to do. And it solves all the problems. And guess what? It even probably solves the gravity problem. Because of what? Because of gravity. The same way that we were comfortable with split leveling the bar shaka and basically ignoring the chazanish's critique, instead of split leveling the bar shaka, just split level the mikvah itself. So Rabbi said, what's this called? This kind of mikvah, this is a Chabad mikvah. The classic standard Chabad mikvah is built this way. No kunsim with naim shuv, no kunsim with bar shaka, with bar zriya. It's simply what's called a bor, a gabi bor. It's easy, it's cost effective, and you know what? Nothing can go wrong with it. Because you can't mess it up. Anything else here you can mess up. You can't mess it up. There's no human error. Nothing can possibly go wrong. So why don't we all build the mikvah this way? Because there were some poskim who said that this mikvah is no good. Why is it no good? What? Because hashaka only works sideways, doesn't work up and down. Very simple. That was the Divrei Chaim. So the Divrei Chaim, the sons of Rav, but the long perish and others be false, and he said that the whole thing is no good. No, in case anyone's been using Chabad and Pros, don't feel bad at the table at the good, even because of the Divrei Chaim is not as that, because they're built a little bit differently, but hang in there for a second. So the Divrei Chaim said that you cannot build a mikvah this way. There's no hashaka going up and down. It just doesn't work. There's all halacha mashm and sinai, there's all these dinner, we don't know where they came from. It doesn't work. There's no mokrafis and shas and chazal. There are curses against it, and therefore the whole thing doesn't work. Now, truth to be told, according to Divrei Chaim, what did we waste also? A couple of dollars by doing what? They're building a split level bar hashacha. Because according to Divrei Chaim, it's split up. But between you and me, we don't really care, because the whole thing was a chumra gabi chumra. Anyway, that's why it probably wouldn't be so smart just to fill up the ma'am shuv mandal. Because in case Divrei Chaim's right, then you just threw your bar hashacha out the window. Okay? So, we're willing to say we're not going to be chashish for the Divrei Chaim, the gabi chumras and chumras and chumras. But to say we're going to build an entire mikvah that's anti the Divrei Chaim, just because we rely on this svara of the Chabad mikvahs, so many people get very, very weird, get very, very nervous about this. But, again, there are many, many mikvahs that are in America that are built today, that are built with this model. It's very cheap, and it's very easy to build. You're in the middle of Wyoming, and you want to build a mikvah somewhere, and you don't have all that much money to do it, and who knows who's going to be supervising this mikvah for Dari Darius. This is the easiest way to go. The only problem is that conventional wisdom is we don't do it that way. Outside of Chabad circles, we wouldn't build a mikveh that way, because men, there are some poskim who didn't like it. However, one important element. There are many poskim who claim that the original objection that the poskim had in Europe, this is going on in Europe, this is really the same spot in Grand Act, it's been going on already for 100 plus years. The original objection that some people have to the Chabad standard, Bar Gavi Bar, was because the original ones were built in such a way that they weren't literally resting one upon another. It was almost like a pipe connecting them, and when there's a pipe connecting them, then you have to come into Chus HaShachar. There's a sefer in the post, they call sefer Mikveh Mayim, written by Chosh Lerov and Barbara Grimia Katz. He has these beautiful pictures when I was putting together some stuff in Shurim and Mikvos, so I wanted to use some of his diagrams, so I called him up for Rishus. He has Rishus, I understood English. I don't think I understood what I wanted, because then I heard from somebody else that he wanted to know. He told some Rav who said, "Who is that Rabbi Antina who took my pictures?" And I asked him a favor to take the band. And so got lost in the shuffle. Anyway, but he's an Ozim Belman, right? And he has a whole chapter dedicated to show you why even the opponents that are Chabad Mikvos could not oppose the way they're built today, because they're not built today with a pipe in the middle. They just plop, just one sits on top of another. And that may be better than Hashapa. That may be literally a mitzvah echad. So again, it's beyond the scope right now, but even those who at one time were opposed to Chabad mikvahs may concede to them today. But the ma'aseh standing mikvahs outside the Chabad communities are not built this way. What's a strange phenomenon is that sometimes when we build mikvahs, we want everyone to be happy. We want Chabad mikvahs to be happy. So what sometimes happens is we build a mikvah in a community, and we build an alihidurim. You can't get better than this. This is like the best of the best of the best. We got Bozrias, we got Boshuppas, we got split level Boshuppas, we got everything. There's nothing that can go possibly wrong, ever. And then what happens? Then a few Chabad people in the community say, we want a Bar Gavi Bar also. Because somehow they feel it has to be, that's the way the rabbis put the bar. It's got to be a Bar Gavi Bar. So you know what we'll do? Make them happy also. So we build a Bar Gavi Bar in addition to everything else. So if, even though between you and me, we gain absolutely almost nothing. Well, Mamash was nothing. Everyone should be happy. Shalom Israel. So, for another couple of $1,000, you know what we do? We stick another hole in the ground over here, put a little hole over here, and call it Shalom Israel. And then, in case you ever notice, in case you're ever swimming, deep diving, inside the bottom of the mikvah, and you measure the hole between the top and the bottom, you'd be shocked to find that it's more than a shofaris anod. It's actually the size of a fist. Does anyone know why it's the size of a fist? Good, because nobody knows what the size of this. But in one of the spar, I forgot about it, which I think Shaul Ben, one of the Rebbe Rashad, I'm not mistaken. So his guidelines for writing, if you're building a mikvah, I think it was him, or maybe it's Baltanya, I don't remember. One of them writes that when you build this mikvah, bar gavi bar, so you have to have kimono egg roof. The hole has to be the size of a fist. Well, nobody knows why he said that. That does, there's no such shir, it doesn't exist, it doesn't correspond to anything. Mistabel, what he meant was to make sure that nobody goops and sits there. And so he said, make it easy for people, make it a little bit bigger than it should be. So that was probably the whole kavana. Nope, can't fill the mikvah unless that's the size of a fist. So I'm sure it's the whole became the size of a fist. Yeah, we don't understand where in the world that number came from. So someone argued there's a lumpus to it. Maybe the mikvah mayim tries to do the lamitz chus on the fist size. Maybe you need a fist to make it a mikvah echad to avoid any problems of a shakas. The babish is a chashish, and it gives the whole party. But again, the bottom line is that there are many, many mikvahs today that are built in such a way that you have, how many bayers here? I lost track. You have five bayers. Okay? Each one costs you a couple of $1,000 just to get the dirt out of the ground, but you want to build five boros, which of course means more and more rain, more and more nothing for rain, but you have to fill up all these vocal bayers to make everybody happy. So again, so this Bor HaShoka seemed to make everybody happy except for human error. This made everybody happy except for the Raivit. This made everybody happy except for somebody, we're not sure who. And this makes the Chabadis happy, so everybody's happy. Shalom, Ali Yisrael, and everybody's happy. And the community doesn't have any money. Yeah.
I still don't understand.
What is
the problem?
It's
okay, what is the problem of God's work accomplished?
Nothing.
But what about the issue? The whole point of the Baruch HaShaka is for cleanliness, right? So that you can change the water and close one off. How do you do that with this?
How are you going to change the water? You say you have to plug in. Every other day, you have to close up the stick of plunger or something to close it.
Yeah, but would there be a fix in the situation for all Gabi Bor? Theoretically, if you inlaid the upper bore, so you had a slight hashaka from this, meaning you inlay it, like, let's say, 6 inches down into the. It's like you build, basically, you build the lower bore.
Okay, you want to where it holds up.
So
the
you
upper.
Can have some form of connection, but still gravity is not, you're never going
right.
to go below
right.
20.
Right.
Below
your idea is you want to lower the neck a little bit,
I want to lower the main, meaning
the neck of HaShaka would like to be lowered down, right?
I'm saying in the case of Borah Gavibor is to have the lower bore built slightly around the bottom of the upper bore, meaning you, in a sense, you're going
to
have
I'm lost.
Meaning, you have this bore built out so that you have, theoretically, would include having Hashaka.
You read Hashaka.
Yeah, but at the same point, you still have gravity, because even though there's that little hole, inevitably, you can't really, it's not all going to.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. You want to keep this hole open all the time, or you want to close it?
We keep it open.
But you go open all the time.
But at the same point, even.
No, but you still don't. Even your hashakas here, even though your mikvah is here, so you solve the mechayim's.
Correct.
Concern.
That's what I'm saying. Because you're not gonna lose.
I'm not sure that.
Really.
I'm not sure that would solve the mechayim's concern.
Because I'm saying that you feel this still breaking.
You're still mashing. You're still mashing. This I don't. Okay.
The cut of hashaka, is it just touching? Is the philosophy of just touching,
yeah.
Or is it just touching?
As long as it touches.
So then, why wouldn't the
No, unless you hold that for some reason that Hashoka has to touch it in a certain manner. So there is a sugi in the Gemara about kataphras, about water going to the slant, going down the hill. It's the Gemara and Mishnah says kataphras and a chibur. That was the Mechaim's arguing
They're not interchanging. Like, if there's a hole connecting two of them, we can say it's touching, but there's not a backflow.
Right, so that's good. I mean,
it's constantly moving in and out. That's how it works.
You mean you want to argue that even going to Lubavitcher's, at some point you're going to lose the rabbit. It may take you much longer, but by the time you lose the rabbit going to Lubavitcher's, you probably want to clean the mikveh anyway. So I don't know. I'm not sure. More the water pressure stuff. I don't know. Okay. Rabbi Sag, so it sounds like we are home free. We are good to go. And yet, it's just so real. Just give you a Kedushas Klal Yisrael, Taras Klal Yisrael, the future by Israel. We want this to be really, really good. So we're still in the back of our minds a little bit nervous. So we have another trick up our sleeve. That's a sugya that appears in Maseches Temura. It's referred to in other places as well. That's a principle called Hamshocha. Hamshocha means that you can take Mayim Shuvim, Mamash real bona fide Mayim Shuvim, and rather than fill it directly into a mikvah, run it along the ground for a little while, and have it go from the ground into the mikvah, and hocus pocus, shalom, Yisrael, loses its status of shuvim. That's a principle called Hamshocha. Now, truth to be told, there's a machlekes atanoim, the whole sugya that we're about. Is that really true? You can make 40 saw of maybe of mayim shuvim and run along the ground and show my Yisrael. So that's what one opinion says. One rishon you can pass it that way, and we don't pass it that shocha. We pass it that you need ain a shuvim l'tarn el b'reviv am shocha. Means you have to have rov megishamim, the salvation to rise upon potentially the world. You have to have rov megishamim, and then the rest of the 19 saw you can play this game of am shocha with. But unless you have 21 saw of megishamim and mamish without the am shocha, it's not the rov. That's what we pass it. So the Rambam in Hilchos Megillos quotes the other opinion, and he says that Yesh b'ga'onim ma'arovs, and the ga'onim from the west, right, the ga'onim in Morocco, and in North Africa, who will make it like this, they can just build a mikvah mamish from scratch, just take water, throw it along the ground, and show it like Yisrael. And the Rambam says, lo shamanim me'olam, there should be a Jewish community that should ever do this. So the ga'onim ma'arov held in theory, but nobody really did it. So in Shulchan Aruch, we don't follow. We pass it that when you build a mikvah, derech hamshacha is not bad for 19 so, but not for the whole thing. So Taisa Bava Basra claims that mid the araisa of the Goni Marav are right. That mid the araisa you can build an entire mitzvah based on Rav Shacha. It's just that mid the rabbanan you have to have a via Rav Shacha. And not everyone agrees to that Taisa. So what we try to do is, every time we fill up a mitzvah with water for us to force it, before any water gets anywhere near this mitzvah, it goes through a process of Rav Shacha. What do we gain by that? First of all, according to the Goni Marav, that opinion the Rambam rejects. The mikvah is technically kosher, just based on that, even if everything fails. Even if the right is right and the chazanish is right and the babish is right, everyone's wrong, the mikvah is still okay, according to the Gonim Arav. And number two, according to Tosaf and Basra, it's still good midaraisa. So we've gotten guest colors. So therefore, we have an insurance policy, a backup. If all said and done, any and every water that goes anywhere near this mikvah will come derech hamshacha. Now, where is water coming to this mikvah? How is water, what kind of water is going to go through hamshacha? So we employ the principle of Hamshach at multiple points in the mikvah. Number one, we're never filling up water into the Hashacha anyway, right? But only this faucet one is only going through the Boros Ria. But before it goes through the Boros Ria, the faucet, I made a little bit of a mistake in the picture. The faucet doesn't lead directly into here. The faucet goes to here, and then there's a ledge on the edge. And then the water goes along this little ledge, the amount of space that's necessary to create a Hamshacha. And then and only then it goes into here, and then goes through, and etc. Okay, so that's one place where we're going to employ the principle of Hamshacha. We're going to employ Hamshacha in a few other places also. When we originally filled up the Megishamim, we're not going to let the water come straight off the roof through the pipe to go into the ground. We're going to stick in Hamshacha there for good luck. Why? What if, it's my Megishamim. What are we worried about? We're worried that somebody forgot to do what? Someone forgot to tighten up the Play-Doh on the screws. And somebody forgot to do what? Somebody forgot to check that there are no cracks. There are no chances. There are no gross. So throw it on. If nothing to lose, nothing to lose and everything to gain. So therefore, any and every place we could possibly have any water coming anywhere near this mikvah, that always goes there, I'm sure. That's what I've got. All mikvahs are built this way. These built-in insurance policies, I'm sure. There is a big machlekes that we've shown him. In order for Hamshacha to be valid, does it have to be what's called karka ruim nevloya? Does it have to be a type of a karka that the water can mamash like sink into, like literally seep into the ground itself? Or it can even go along, as long as it's near the karka, it doesn't matter. That's a question we should. If you insist on karka ruim nevloya, it's a little bit messier. Because we would love to make hamshacha with nice tiles, nice, smooth. It's karka, it's the whole karka, but it's not dirty. The last thing we'd want to do is run water into a beautiful multi-million-dollar mikvah and run it along some filthy, muddy ground. So we would really like not to have to have karka really low. The only problem is that Rishonim insisted on it. There is a machlokes in the Rishonim how big, how far this Hamshach has to go. Does it have to go 3 tefachim? Some Rishonim are machlokes. They love it. They have to go 3 tefachim. Another say, no. Even less than 3 tefachim, don't see that. So again, beyond the scope right now, there's a Brisker Rav that says these two showers are totally different. And it comes out, according to the Brisker Rav, that the Machamir Muli Karka Rul of Loa are the ones who don't need 3 tefachim, and vice versa. So because of that, Poshtigal Torah became a practice in some mikvahs that we have almost like a token Karka Rul of Loa, not 3 tefachim worth. We We have most of we have tiled, nice clean, and then when nobody's looking, we throw in a little two by nothing. Carpet room is lower, and Shoyman calls it a day. So why am I telling you this story? Because nobody knows that it exists, because we don't want anyone to know it says they're there. I've seen some results that have that carpet room is lower, and then they put a nice fake tile on top of it. And then you remove, the water's really going underneath the tile. Nobody knows. When you pull up the tile, lo and behold, there's filthy, muddy water going to don't tell me. Okay. So the, remember years ago, when we first got married, so we went there to Shalom, and one of my wife's cousins is Yerushalmi. He has a mikveh in his backyard. He's like, this is what he wanted to show me. Some people like to show off their cars, their houses. He wanted to show me the mikveh. So he showed me his mikveh, and he started to say to me, you know, he said that this is what comes down here, you know, he's broken English, I broke the Yiddish, and we were trying to convert to one another, and they freaked, you know, somewhere in the middle we met. And so I looked at it, so I said, oh, you're Ashit, Brisket Rav, so you have a little bit of a guy who was blowing and the rest is not. He said, he was blown away. And very simply said, America, Shabu, what was that? Oh, Brisket Rav. I said, Beta, come on, this America, what was that? So he didn't think that I was off the wall. But anyway, but nice, the reveal will be closed today. Some of the will be closed. Achayishish, this wild kind of fun. So this is all the background of what I said. We've just solved one problem in Hukos Kedvos. That's the problem of Maim Shuvim. So I would say we would give equal time into the next problem. We have about 3 minutes in the next problem, which would seem to me maybe even a more serious problem. And that's the problem with called Maim Zochlin. Now again, we didn't, unfortunately we don't have, I don't know, maybe early, maybe another year or so, maybe next year we'll part two. But whatever it is, there's a whole nother problem with the Kedvos. A rub has to be aware of it. That's called Zochlin. Zochlin means if the water of the mikvah is moving. So it could be all the non-shuv in the world. If it's moving, it's a disaster. What could water moving be caused by? A few things. If you have a crack in the walls of the mikvah, you have a very, very serious problem in the end. Because according to many Rishonim, that water is now moving. It's exiting the mikvah. So if at any time it comes to your attention, there's a crack, and how do you even know there's a crack in the mikvah? Because the mikvah attendant tells you, you know, it's very strange. We filled up the mikvah, and somehow we don't have only 3 people used it last night, and we went down a gallon of water. What's going on? And then every night we're losing water. So the answer is, you're only losing water because you have a crack somewhere. You may have a crack in the base of Tvila, you may have a crack in the Bar HaShapa, you may have a crack in the lower level part, but you may really have a crack. But guess what? You better find out. You better bring in your experts, and you better bring in people to empty out that mikvah for you and find out where that crack is, because that crack has to be repaired. Okay? Because otherwise you're running into potential problems elsewhere. So that's one thing a Rav should be aware. If you get that call, that friend to call, and see you have a crack in the mikvah, so that takes expertise to try to figure out how to, first you have to identify the crack, figure out how to best fix the crack. So that's problem one. We try very, very hard the way I'm supposed to build the top of the line material, but it doesn't happen. Usually it doesn't happen for more than a year. We hope to pray that it never happens, but it does happen. Sometimes it happens in McVeigh's that it had to be shut down or partially shut down because of crack. So you have to just be aware such a thing happens. Another potential issue with Zochlin is the issue of the filters. Again, filters are complicated. So we want to filter the water in the mikvah because it keeps the water even cleaner, and we want it to be as clean as possible. But filters, depending on how they're built, could potentially be problems with Zochlin. So therefore, again, giving out the details now, filters can be used in mikvahs, but they have to be shut off when the women are actually using it. So you have to have some kind of a system to make sure that everybody knows the filter is off. Some, if there's a responsible mikvah woman, she knows, she turns the filter off when they're during the hours it's being used. And sometimes a woman comes 2 o'clock in the morning, so nobody should ever come themselves to the mikveh without alerting the mikveh attendants that they're coming, because first of all, there are alarms that are on, and there are filters that are sometimes on. You have all kind of problems. So someone has to be on top. You can't just come and use the mikveh yourself in the middle of the night. You have to make sure that it's monitored properly. So that's also something else the Rav has to be aware of, that the system for the filters is put in potentially. Okay. Just got a shayla, literally 2 weeks ago, shayla, an out-of-town mikveh, about another potential problem with Zochlin, is that the mikveh by mistake had been filled too high. It had been filled all the way to the tippy top of the base of Tefillah. The woman goes in, and some of the water shoots out. That may be a potential issue with Zochlin. Maybe. The Iker Adin is probably not the way the setup was. The Iker Adin would let them continue to use the mikveh that night, although we really, really wanted to drain out some of the excess water. We had way more than enough water in the mikveh. It just wasn't so logistically possible. It was very difficult for people to get in the mikveh, using it already, it was balagan. But that's something that the Rav should also be aware of. You may get a call from a mikveh attendant that, oh my goodness, the water is too high. Now what? So you have to try to figure out how to alleviate that problem, just how serious that problem is. It's also a potential issue of Zohar. So Zohar does come up. One of the biggest problems of Zohar is the sugyas in the Gemara about natural bodies of water. Sometimes people think, well, it's a river, what could possibly be wrong? It's a lake, what could possibly be wrong? What could be wrong? It may be Zohar. Because rivers are made up of combinations of rainwater and spring water. Spring water can be Zohar, that's fine. I mean, my home, the mikveh is Zohar, and that's fine. But rainwater cannot be Zohar. So whether a given body of water is rainwater or spring water, that's been a lot about the geology, you gotta know about the time of year, you gotta know about the weather patterns. So it's not so simple just to say, oh yeah, no problem, it's a river, it's a lake, it's a this, it's a that. You have to be really, really, really certain that you're not running into a potential problem. So anytime anyone calls you and says, I want to use a natural body of water, it better be mevarer that body of water has already been approved, or unless you want to go out there and try to figure out how to approve it. One time I was called by a group of people that were going out to someplace out on the West Coast. A bunch of families were going out for a two-week vacation or something, and they wanted to use a certain lake. So they wanted to know whether that particular lake was Zohar or not. And I have no idea. How am I going to know if the lake is Zohar or not? Depends. Is there a dam in the lake? Not a dam in the lake. Is the water going through? Not a, is it rainwater? Is it spring water? You have to find out all the facts first. So they put me in touch with one of the park rangers to try to figure out what was going on. The conversation lasted for about 30 seconds. So he was not happy when we were asking about dams on the lake. He wanted to know what we were up to exactly, why we were asking about the lake dams in the world that we live in today. He wasn't so excited about that. So we tried to explain to him, no, we needed it because of purity, and it becomes into going away. So I'm not a rabbi, I'm not about my face, but it's a very strange thing because I told my kid, I have no idea what the lake is covered or not. So what happened was that they changed their itinerary, went somewhere else, and they asked somebody else about that lake. And strangely enough, the night before they were supposed to go, that campsite burned down. In the lake. I had nothing to do, I didn't know what the lake was. I didn't know where the campsite was, but everyone was like a little nervous, heebie-jeebies about the lake. But anyway, the bottom line is when somebody's using a natural body of water, so make sure that it's okay. Somebody once gave me a shit women, that's everything I think about McFellows, and somebody told me, I mentioned this thing of natural bodies of water, they're not always so pushy. Somebody told me a story that their friend told them they live in some place, some island somewhere, and they use some kind of a waterfall in the backyard from the coast. So I said, could be Mr. Curtis, and it's possible with the Risa. So they called a friend and told me, you better ask me that, we better find out. Yeah. So it could be from that one shield, we say something in Mr. Curtis. I don't know what they were doing. They thought that it's a natural bottle of water, it's flowing water, great, hunky dory. Not so simple at all. So you have to just be very, very careful. Anytime you hear about any kind of natural body of water, you have to find out whether that's acceptable.
Well, this halachos of mikvah apply for all types of mikvah?
Like, well, they apply for tefillah. Not sure they apply for tefillah dam, they apply for tefillah kain.
Okay.
But tefillah for men, so zochlin is still potentially a problem for men. My truth is that it's not a problem for tefillah men. That's why swimming pools and filters are off, basically okay for tefillah for anoshim. But the halachos don't really matter. You have to be careful sometimes. Sometimes you have people do tefillah kain in a men's mikvah. Some of the men's mikvahs are not crushing the clothes. They're just giant, oversized bathtubs. The mayim should have been filled up in the hole in the ground. So you have to make sure, if you want to do tefillah kain, you have to make sure that the mikvah is up to par. Anyway, we do not have enough time to talk too much about Zohar and about other things, a lot of other things as well, but at least try to give you a little bit of the ABCs of what we're going to do.
Okay, well, downstairs.